Program are those of the host and the participants.
Greetings. Welcome back to Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney, coming to you live today from Campbell Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois here in WILL AM 580. We're going to be taking a slight change of pace from what the program's been dealing with in the last few weeks, even the last couple of months, and turn to an issue that is every bit as important as journalism and advertising and commercialism, and clearly related to both those, but also strikes out new directions, which is the revolutionary possibilities of technologies to radically improve our media and communication systems. And we're going to be talking about something not theoretical, that's years down the road like science fiction, but rather something that's actually taking place right now in our own community here in Urbana-Champaign and in communities around the nation, conceivably could revolutionize the communication system of the entire United States. The envelope, please. What I'm talking about is community wireless. Community wireless networks. And today in Media Matters, I'm privileged to have as our guest two of the leaders of the local Champaign-Urbana community wireless network system, and two of the leaders of the local independent media centers, and two people who are integrally involved in the big national conference coming up this coming weekend, next weekend, August 20th, 22nd, here in Urbana, Illinois, called Making the Connection, the 2004 National Summit for Community Wireless Networks. So sit back, relax, and let's learn all about the community wireless networks today. My guests are Zach Miller and Sasha Meinrath. Sasha Meinrath has been a guest on Media Matters in the past once or twice. How many times, Sasha?
2 years now.
2 years now. So he's a regular guest, approaching John Nichols for most guest award. And the first time we've had him live in the studio, usually taping him. And Sasha's a PhD student in the Institute of Communications Research at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign and is a longtime resident and activist here on media and social justice issues in the area. Joining us also, Zach Miller. And Zach, why don't you give folks a hint of your biography for him?
So, I came to Champaign-Urbana in 1995 for school. I studied computer science and linguistics, and I thought, you know, I'd come here, do my schooling in the cornfields and get the hell out as soon as possible, you know. But I found that I really liked it here a lot and that there's this amazing activist scene here, especially around media activism. In 2000, we started the Independent Media Center. Mm-hmm. Me and Sasha and a whole bunch of other folks. There's
Sasha and I.
That's true.
Yeah, you're PhD.
I studied linguistics, not English.
About
a dozen of us started the Independent Media Center here and mm-hmm. have started doing media work. And we've got WEFT, and then we started this community wireless thing. So I'm pretty much hooked on the town and staying for a good long time.
Well, this community wireless thing is pretty interesting stuff. I've gotten to know quite a bit about it myself in the past year. In fact, we had a guest on about a year ago who just alluded to it briefly, Christian Sandvig from the mm-hmm. SpeechCom department here. We did a show with Christian about a year ago, but just alluded to it. We didn't really go into the details. Let's start at the very basics. I mean, what this whole thing, community wireless, we're having a national conference on it next weekend. It's this booming technology, and it's right here on the ground and working in Champaign-Urbana. What, in a nutshell, is this technology? What are community wireless networks, and why? What's radical about them? What's revolutionary about them?
Well, I imagine, if you would, the same way that people today get cable television, or they get internet through cable or a DSL line. Imagine that
DSL
sort of,
being a phone line.
Exactly. Imagine that sort of connectivity, but without the wires. And what that means is that anyone can set these up for far cheaper, a tenth or a hundredth what it would cost to run a wired line. To give an example, in downtown Urbana, two local businesses decided they wanted to share their internet connection. To do it by putting a line through the street would have cost $10,000 and up. They were able to get $150 worth of wireless equipment, beam across the street the same way, say, a television reception works or a radio station can beam its signal out to its listeners, and share their internet connection through this technology.
Yeah, well, Zach, I mean, wireless, that sounds good, but you know, you got that big fat cable wire coming to your home, or a nice wire protected from the elements, from hurricanes, and from snowstorms. I mean, isn't wireless a much more dubious way to get your internet access? I mean, there's all sorts of nature can get in the way. It's just not going to be able to carry as much as a wire.
It could be dubious if it weren't for the very thing that we're working on right now, which is mesh wireless. And the idea of mesh wireless is that you have a whole bunch of people who have this sort of wireless sharing going on, and they create like a cloud around their house, a cloud of information access around their house. And anybody that's in range of that cloud can get access to that information. And you end up creating this sort of spider web from house to house to house to house. And if something takes one link down, if something takes the ability of one house to talk to the next house down, the network heals itself basically by sending the information around the problem part to where it needs to go. And so this is the concept of mesh, which is something that nobody's really ever done before in the civilian sector. This is our group is the first group really working on this concept and making it work well.
So right.
We know that mesh has been developed for military usage using taxpayer dollars, in fact, in much the same way, I guess, the early internet was
developed. Isn't the whole principle of the internet, as I've been teaching it, so correct me if I'm wrong, the whole idea is a mesh principle. There's not one dedicated line that can be cut off and kill the system.
Exactly. The major difference between the early internet development and today's wireless development is that taxpayer dollars, which funded both, today the government has now licensed the technologies to private companies who are then making private profit off of this commonly funded resource. So you have certain companies that have proprietary systems that do mesh, and then you have hundreds of groups all over the country developing open source software, playing around and finding out solutions in the hardware realm that cost a fraction of what these private companies are charging for these sorts of technologies. And that's where both QN, but also a lot of other groups have really have captured in many ways the early spirit, the entrepreneurial spirit that led to the internet today.
I'm Bob McChesney. You're listening to Media Matters. Our guests today, Sasha Meinrath and Zach Miller, working on the Champaign-Urbana Community Wireless Network. If you'd like to call in and talk with us, the number here at Media Matters is 333-9455. Our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. There's going to be a major conference called Making the Connection, the 2004 National Summit for Community Wireless Networks, taking place this coming weekend, August 20th to 22nd, right here in Champaign-Urbana. It's going to have how many people are planning to come to this? And Sasha and Zach are organizing it. How many folks are coming to the conference, Sasha?
Well, originally we were hoping for 25 to 50, and then last month we said,
it's just
50.
A recent thing. You just thought of this a few months ago, right? It's not like something that's been 8 years in the
planning. Right. There's been a need for this for years. We've been talking about it. And then in June, we basically decided the time is now. We need to have this summit. It is an emergency. If we don't get people together fighting for the public good, fighting for open source solutions, fighting for solutions that cost end users a tenth what private solutions cost, then these are going to be owned by, you know, the SBCs of the world and by, you know, these companies whose not interest is not in the public good but rather in the private profit. What we decided is by the end of the summer we need to get people together. We need to start affecting national policy on this issue, and that's why it was called with 3 months planning. We've really dedicated our lives over the course of the summer to getting this thing up and running. We're now anticipating well over 100. We think probably it's going to be 150 to 200 people, which is, you know, four or eight times what we were originally expecting. And that demonstrates just how important that on such short notice people are flying in from all over North America.
There's a real recognition that this is an issue that's pressing and has to be addressed immediately, and it's tremendous potential. And if people are interested in finding out about the Community Wireless Summit, the place to go is to the web at, correct me if I'm wrong, www.communitywirelesssummit.org. That's where people have strong fingers. Man, typically can get shorter. One can be like CommunityWirelessSummit.org. Okay.
You can also link to it. There's a link to it right from the Champaign-Urbana Community Wireless Network website, which is CUWireless.net.
Okay. I hope you've all remembered that. and if you want to attend the conference, there is a fee, but it's a sliding scale. We don't give numbers over the air, just alert you so you don't be think otherwise. And there is room available still if people do want to come, but it is filling up quickly. And
we've already had to move many of our sessions to larger rooms because
it's taking place at what building on campus?
It's at the Siebel Center, which is located right next door to WILL.
Yeah, right. We can almost see from here if we had windows.
And it will be on the first, second, and third floors of the Siebel Center. You really won't be able to miss us. We're taking over the whole building.
And there are, and I know a lot of our listeners won't be familiar with some of the names, but just to give a sense, what sort of folks will be at this conference from out of town? What groups they represent? What their positions are?
One of the folks I'm most excited about meeting is Matthew Rantanen is going to be there. He's the leader of the Tribal Digital Village Network project. They're out in, I believe it's... in Los somewhere near Los San Diego. That's right,
Southern
San Diego
Cal,
County. Yeah,
yeah.
And it's a group of several Native American tribes who all have separate reservations and separate tribal lands, who are working together to network all of their land using wireless. Right now, their phone-based infrastructure is really, really poor. It's almost impossible to get any kind of internet connection at all. Some days the phone line is down completely. Some days they can dial in at speeds that you would have gotten in the 70s. You know, I mean, speeds that are just unacceptable for today's use. And they've gotten a large grant, and they've actually done some of the best work with really long-distance rural installations of mm-hmm. wireless. What we're working on here in town is an urban installation, a house-to-house sort of short-link system, and they're doing these long haul systems, and I think their information combined with our information could lead to a great synergy, especially as we look at implementing wireless out in the third world and in mm-hmm. developing nations and stuff. I think that there's a lot of synergy that can happen there. So I'm really excited that he's going to come and
Well, before we go into the other guests and talk a little more about the conference, I want to get back to a point, Sasha, you just made at the outset, which is wireless internet access is coming. It's going to be the way
Absolutely.
People get their internet within 5 or 10 years, the mm-hmm. dominant form, because mm-hmm. having these expensive wires into the home just simply don't make economic sense. Mm-hmm. The question is, what type of wireless systems are we going to have? That's really what this summit's about. That's the work mm-hmm. you're doing it's about. And there's going to be the options you're pushing for, mesh networks that are non-proprietary, that are community-run, and that are non-profit in general, versus the proprietary systems, commercial systems that are emerging. Mm-hmm. Right now, I watch TV, and I seem to be in the target group, the shows I watch for these services. There are advertisements for wireless commercial systems. Mm-hmm. I mean, why not let just the private market compete here and provide the best possible service? Why isn't that the best way to use this technology?
I think the private market is an important element, an important facet of this, and that there will be solutions that the private market will solve and will meet the needs of certain
private
clients.
Markets sort of overkill. This is called market. I don't know.
But I also think that there's a lot of issues over, like, especially digital divide issues, and the economies of scale are so great when you blanket an entire community, or you have a neighborhood or cities, or as Zach was mentioning earlier, tribal villages. All of these sorts of economies of scale, all of this public good that comes from blanketing an entire area really can't be met by just the private market. What we're actually fighting for is not like that all solutions must be non-proprietary, open source, mesh, solutions. What we're saying is that all of the solutions that are out there need to be able to compete on an even keel. And so if, like right now, George Bush is talking a lot about, broadband for everyone, but his solution is really about corporate welfare to a handful of corporations who will then get massive amounts of public monies to develop systems that will be 10 times or 100 times more expensive to end users as what our solution would cost.
Zach, let me just ask you a question. As I understand community wireless networks, this has been explained to me, and for the sake of our listeners, you'll be glad to know I'm a real technological numbskull, so it has to really be put in like simple terms for me to have any idea what this is about. And as soon as someone uses a word like gigabyte, my eyes glaze over and I begin to go into like a panic. So fear not, listeners. We are not going to wonk you out here. But as I understand community wireless networks, what you're working on, these mesh networks, what it really means is that in a community, the ideal solution, the rational solution of this technology is rather than charging individual account users in a community so you have to sign up and pay a monthly fee, since it's really there for anyone who wants it, there's no reason to put these sort of fences in cyberspace, so to speak, but rather just make it a public utility. And as the network builds out, the costs become very low. So the individual cost for being part of this broadband network, they automatically would get it, is very low. It wouldn't be $30, $40 a month. I mean, if everyone in the community is taking part in it as a public utility, you buy a computer, you turn it on, you're automatically hooked up wherever you are in the community. You don't have to sign up for anyone. You don't have to pay anyone. You don't have to register. The cost should be, economically, the economic cost is extraordinarily low. Is that correct? And then this is battling a proprietary system that can't do that because its whole premise is people have to, individual signers who have to be pay a monthly fee and be part of the team, and they can, and that's the condition for participating.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that when you asked, why nonprofit and why not private, is that fundamentally I don't think that private companies can do this. Private companies need to do this. They do a hierarchical model. They want to have everything centralized so they can control it from one point. And that is the best way to make profit off of a thing. You know, the phone systems, the cable systems, all of this stuff is very centralized. But if you want to do this right and have the problem solved quickly and easily and actually maximize the utility of what wireless itself gives you, then you do want to have this decentralized approach like you're talking about. And I very much see it. I'm very much inspired by the models of WILL, public radio, community radio like WEFT, where the community gets together either through their taxes or through charity giving to support a public resource that is just available on the airwaves. And anybody can get it, whether they're paying for it or not. And those folks who care to keep it up, you know, themselves can help to pay for it.
Sasha?
We like to talk about it in terms of, say, streets, because that's something that everyone understands, the benefit that comes from having everyone have access to streets and having streets go to everyone's house. Internet is a medium that is vital and growing even more vital in the world today. And to have this sort of connectivity given to the entire community as opposed to just those that can afford it is, I think, incredibly important, both in terms of social justice, but also in terms of building a more solid, stronger community itself.
So the way this system would work, if I get it, then is if you have it in a community, everyone can basically get access to it. Ideally, it's just automatic. You don't have to pay for it to register. Everyone in the community gets it. It's paid for through some sort of funding, but it's relatively low on a per capita basis.
Right.
How's the quality compared to what a proprietary system can deliver? I mean, are you suffering? You know what they always say about public sector or nonprofit things. They're emaciated compared to those high-tech, big, jazzy, private sector things with a lot of resources and research and development. Is the product going to be anywhere near as good as what you're going to get if you go to a proprietary system?
Not just as good. It's actually going to be identical. The technology is being utilized, the systems, the protocols, as it were, the ways in which these devices communicate with each other are the same in our system as you would get for paying, you know, 10 times more. There is no difference at that level.
Now, how about, you know, and I talked off the air with you, Sasha, about this, and Zach, I think you can answer this probably as well, if not better. One of the big deals in broadband access, now if you get cable modem like I have in my house, or if you have DSLs, a lot of people do over phone lines, is that the sending something to someone else is a lot slower than getting something. It's really built to download, to send emails and to shop and surf websites that are sent. But it's not as the flow back, if you want to send a file yourself, is a lot different. It's I don't know what the ratio is, but it's like 5-1 or something, or 9-1.
Yeah. One of the things I'm most excited about the community wireless network is the ability to turn the end users into producers instead of just consumers.
Mm.
I think that DSL and cable are very much oriented towards people who are passive consumers of information, who are constantly downloading and never providing information out to the net. With a community wireless network, you have symmetric bandwidth, and what that means is that what you can take down is exactly the same as what you can put up. And so you have the ability to run your own radio show out of your house, a webcast radio show or even a video stream out of your house. You could have your own TV show.
And I mean, it's really going to be high quality. It's not going to be some choppy little thing in the corner of the screen.
Sure, yeah. You could do it at arbitrary bandwidths. And a lot of that ends up being not a product. The bandwidth, which is the amount of information you can put through on a wireless network, is actually probably 10 to 100 times more than what you would get over DSL. Mm-hmm. And so,
what, 10 to 100 times more?
I think so. I mean, I think that if you take into account,
I mean, that's virtually the speed of light, isn't it? I mean, you're getting pretty close, aren't you?
Well, I mean,
with existing systems, you can have 54 megabits a second throughput, which is, it's 50.
Yeah, we've just lost half our listeners.
Right.
Thanks,
so
Sasha.
We're talking about on the uplink. On the uplink, it's definitely going to be 100 times at 50 megabits, you're going to be 100 times more, which, you know, it's a bunch of numbers flying around and you're talking about the speed of light, but it's all the speed of light. I mean, radio waves travel at the speed of light, and it's really about that's why it's called bandwidth. It's how wide it is. It's, you know, you send a real wide beam of light or a real narrow beam of light, and you can get different amounts of information through there. So you can get very large amounts of information sent through this system, but then the choke point, you know, the place where you might have a bottleneck is where it finally actually gets to the internet. You know, the actual somewhere there's a wire connected to this whole thing eventually that takes you to the rest of the internet. Mm-hmm. And that's where actually private industry starts to come in, is that the thing that private industry is really good at is delivering large amounts of bandwidth to
they
one.
They build up these huge trunk lines.
Right,
that
to one
the country.
To one place. And they really like to just sell all that at once instead of what's called the last mile. They don't like doing the last
mile.
So
the community wireless model still leaves the major trunk lines are privately owned, and that is leased. It doesn't try to replace what's been built by the private sector. It simply
Correct.
Takes that last section and says, let's make that a community model, a community nonprofit system. We're talking today with Sasha Meinrath and Zach Miller from the Champaign-Urbana Community Wireless Network, who are also two of the main organizers for the big conference coming up this weekend in Urbana, Making the Connection, the 2004 National Summit for Community Wireless Networks that will be here in the Siebold Center on campus. And if you'd like to call in and talk about community wireless, the number here at Media Matters is 333-9455, our toll-free number 1-800-222-9455. Sasha, Zach, we do have these networks. I mean, that's the exciting mm-hmm. thing here. It's not a hypothetical thing. It's not just something cooked up in a laboratory or a theoretical mm-hmm. physicist textbook. Now, there's not just one technology, right? There's the mesh network that's been developed by the folks here in Urbana, and there are different styles of community networks, is that right, that other people have developed?
Mm-hmm.
What are there competing models? Are they compatible? How is this technology evolving, and where does Urbana fit into it?
There are so many different levels on which things can be compatible or incompatible that there's no simple answer to that. There are certainly incompatible systems out there. One of the biggest problems with a lot of systems that are out there is that they're actually proprietary. There's a lot of companies out there that are trying to sell to municipalities or to corporations or to universities or whatever, any large entity. They're trying to sell these devices that supposedly do the sorts of things that our devices do. And the big problem that you run into with those is that these companies are all fairly small, fairly new, and they have this completely proprietary product. And if that company goes away or if they raise their prices and you don't want to buy their product anymore, you're locked into their technology.
What value added does a private company bring to this exactly? I mean, what are they doing? I mean, I can understand the big trunk line people saying, well, we got the big trunk lines here. But mm-hmm. if you're running the trunk line space from these other big companies, what mm-hmm. value added do they bring?
The reason why most of these systems right now are being deployed by private companies is what they do is they do marketing, and who pays for the marketing are the end users. And so the model is really based around charge people more and use it to say to everyone else like how good this system is,
mm-hmm.
When in fact it isn't doing much different from the systems that we're developing here, and in fact is often worse off. End users are worse off going with a proprietary system. They're locking themselves into a technology that will soon become either obsolete or engulfed within a larger system that it doesn't work with.
We've got a bank of people patiently waiting to ask questions. We're going to get to them in a second. One question I want to ask, though, is that ultimately, in the long run, can we have a commercial and community wireless system both thriving side by side in the same community, or is the technology a network technology? Traditionally, it's what economists call natural monopolies.
Right.
Where, you know, either make it, you know, one network survives ultimately. You can't really have three or four competing networks. The economics are such. And I think the way you describe mesh technology sounds like a classic network technology.
Mm-hmm.
The more people are involved, the lower the costs go radically, the mm-hmm. better the service gets radically.
Right.
I mean, ultimately, can you have a healthy community wireless system in a community and have three or four proprietary commercial systems offering the same service?
I would argue definitely. In fact, you know, there's some things that a community wireless network might not meet the needs of businesses. For example, if they want to ensure the security of their system above and beyond, you know, like ordinary computer system, but they want to be on their own separate, you know, network system, then their solution is really to go with a proprietary system that, you know, goes, you know, all the way to their end door. They connect directly to the company's system. Those sorts of uses are still going to exist. People that want to guarantee that, you know, they can get, you know, they can saturate their own network, for example, download every, you know, movie that they can find. Those sorts of users are still going to want to go with a proprietary system or a private solution. For the other 99% of the users who say, look, you know, I am happy to pay, you know, 30 cents to a couple of bucks a month and tax money and get more, you know, bandwidth than I've ever utilized before in my life, those people are going to benefit from having this non-commercial municipal
system. The
way
you describe it just now, honestly, I don't. If I'm a commercial investor in this industry and you just tell me that 99% of people can get it for 30 cents to $2 a month, get the best service they've ever seen in their life.
Right.
I don't think our proprietary system's doing very well in that environment. I don't.
Banks,
1% can. So four companies fight it out for the 1% for $50 a month.
Right, and that's very much the same way, right? Like long distance services were utilized, you know, back in the day before, you know, everyone had long distance. This was sold to a small number of massive firms, and that's what floated, you know, the AT&T monopoly. So there is historical precedence for this. And I think we're going to return to that where you see certain, you know, mega companies, banks, lawyers' offices perhaps that say, like, look, even though the system is secure, it's not as secure as we feel we need it for our own uses. I mean, ATM systems are on their own separate kind of internet system. There's reasons for that.
Okay. We're talking to Sasha Meinrath, who you just heard. Zach Miller is with us in the studio today also. They're the leaders or among the leaders of the Community Wireless Network here in Champaign-Urbana and also among the key organizers for the big conference coming up this coming weekend, Making the Connection, the 2004 National Summit for Community Wireless Networks, bringing 100 or 150 people from all over the country working on this issue, the leading organizers, technical people, legal people, political, community activists on this extraordinary new technology, which could conceivably revolutionize the entire communication system of the United States. If you want to learn more about the conference, go to www.communitywirelesssummit.org. We have several callers who have been very patient and waiting. Line one, Urbana, you're on the air.
Yes, hello, thank you. A very practical point. My household, that includes three computers and a laptop, has been on dial-up, is about to take advantage of the offer being made by the local cable company to go over to broadband cable. And what I wanted to know was, should I, what you're telling us about, I'm not completely understanding it, is it something that instead of taking now broadband cable, is there a way to contribute to your project? Is there something that I can do other than getting involved with the cable company that you guys are working on and offering here in town?
Mm-hmm. You know, I can tell you right now, Zach and Sasha are arm wrestling for the right to answer that question. Their eyes got big like silver dollars when they heard you because they've heard this one before, and I know this is exactly the question they'd love to answer. So who won the contest?
Great.
Sasha
did.
Go ahead, Sasha.
Right. So what we have in town right now are three prototype networks. We're still developing the technology and are in a massive amount of programming is happening between now and the end of the year. That said, we are looking for people that want to host our nodes. The cost to the end users is zero.
Okay, wait, time out, Sasha. You've already, I mean, right. I hope, are you still there, line one, or have you fallen off the cliff?
I've lost it. Go ahead.
Yeah, let me rephrase it. Here's someone, like this woman in Urbana's got dial-up. She's got three computers. She's thinking of switching to cable modem.
Right.
Does she have is there a community wireless option for her? What would it be, and what would it mean in her life? What would it be like?
Well, I can try to simplify the answer here a little bit. Right now, We're in the development phase of this thing. It's not a production network yet, but we do have we're building a network of 50 households. Mm-hmm. We're going to put 50 different people on this network, but we have to pick and choose based on where those folks are located with respect to the nodes, the houses that are already on the network.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we encourage people to do is to visit our website at cuwireless.net.
Cuwireless.net. Now, this system's up and running in Urbana, right?
Yeah, there have been for 2 years.
She could conceivably join your network
absolutely.
And not...
If she's close enough to the network, this is the problem, is one of the things is, you know, you've got to... Any new person has to be within a block or two.
Well, let's say she's within a block or two. She might be, because I have friends who are on this network.
Right.
If she's within a block or two, what would her choice? She can go to the cable company and pay them X number of dollars a month.
Right.
Or she can go to the CU wireless network. What would her deal be there?
So this technology will completely replace the need for a cable or DSL line. And so what we provide is a prototype network that by the end of the year we will have most of the development done by. What end users supply is a household that we can put up our basically a rooftop computer that goes onto the house.
It's like an antenna or
right.
dish or something.
And the same way your household, instead of plugging into your line that the cable company gives you, you just plug into a little box that we give you. For in terms of cost, the main difference is that we are a nonprofit organization. We do accept voluntary donations, but there's no fixed cost and there's no recurring monthly cost. What we don't provide, which most, I think, most other for-profit organizations do, is a service guarantee. Because we are under development, we do have uptimes that are like about 99% of the time, but we do bring it down to do upgrades to the software, to experiment with new ideas, things like that.
I mean, how many people are in Urbana right now are in the network?
We estimate about 30 to 50 people.
30 to 50, okay. And are they happy so far, what do you say? I mean, people dropping out, or is it?
No, we have a waiting list, in fact, for people that want to join. There's a lot of excitement, and a lot of people are using this on a daily basis.
How about over in Champaign?
We haven't reached over to Champaign yet. One of the problems is that our core nodes are the ones that are actually connected to the internet are in Urbana right now, and campus is sort of in the way between Urbana and Champaign. It's hard to get a signal all the way over to Champaign without passing through campus. And, you know, so...
Can I ask something?
Yeah, please do, caller.
Does a user need to be very computer savvy to be able to handle it?
No, we've designed...
This stage of what you have developed?
We've actually designed our software to be completely plug-and-play. We come and install it on your rooftop, and there's just a place that you plug into, and your network just works.
And then you're just, it's like using like your current system.
It's exactly like using a cable modem. The cable modem's got a little jack in the back that you plug into, or the DSL's got a jack you plug into.
This but once it's plugged in, it's just like you turn on your computer, right. It'll be like any other system. There's no difference whatsoever.
For any end user, it is as simple. If you can plug in a phone, you can plug into this system. That's how
you lost me.
And how does it compare with what, say, the cable company offers in terms of the amount of bandwidth that you get, or something
flow.
Like this?
Well, you get unlimited amount in terms of how much you can upload and download. The speed of the connection is equal to or greater than what most people are getting from their cable modems right now.
That's all you're saying? I thought it was like 100 times greater, you were saying before.
Well, it has the potential to be 100 times greater within the community. So there's two different kinds of traffic. There's your traffic out to the network, and there's the traffic to your neighbors.
So the idea is if everyone in the community had this, eventually the network's built out, then that mesh effect of building up a network, the thing that's super fast then, but you've got to – it's only going to be that super fast within the actual network itself, where it's going to be like –
Right. I mean, the idea is that you may have some information that you want to publish just to folks that's relevant to Champaign-Urbana. You know, say you have your local broadcast radio station, you know, webcast radio station that you run out of your home, and you want folks around here to be able to tune in and listen to news about Champaign-Urbana. You could do that over this network.
Okay, so caller, again, what's the website she should go to, or any other listener should learn more about this and see whether they can plug in?
It's www.cuwireless.net.
Cuwireless.net. Thank you very much.
Can I ask one more question?
Are you trying to take my job? What's going on here? Okay, go ahead.
I mean, I'm very interested, very detailed interest here.
Okay.
So if I'm out of the network area at the moment, say, is it something that, and say we went over to using the cable company for now, is it something like in a year where we could give up the cable company and then participate in what you're doing?
Absolutely.
So
not,
it's,
not
it's
just
expanding.
That, depending on the user agreement that your cable company makes you sign, you can also start sharing this. You can't resell it unless you get a business line. But if you get a residential line, you can share it for free with other users. But again, this
the cable or the wireless, you mean?
Using the wireless system, any two people can start sharing between households.
All right. Well, caller, we'll send you your written exam in the
mail. Okay. I'll keep trying to figure it out. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got one more caller that's waiting. We lost one of our callers. Probably went to the dictionary or their engineering textbook. Sorry about that. Please do call in. The number here is 333-9455. Toll-free 1-800-222-9455. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. This is Media Matters. We're talking about the revolutionary new community wireless networks. Our guests today, Zach Miller and Sasha Meinrath. Line 2, Urbana, you're on the air.
Hi. I would like to thank the CWireless folks for their great effort. I'm looking forward to attending the conference. I'm interested to know about the legal issues involved with this sharing. For instance, can my broadband company restrict me in attending this sort of network? And if so, how are we going to address that?
Mm-hmm. I can definitely speak to that. The short answer is it depends on your user agreement. Some user agreements allow you to share, others do not. Someone has to read through. They're usually about 10,000 words.
What percentage of humans ever read those things?
No one reads them. That's the problem.
They're like four-point type.
Exactly. And they're made to be purposefully confusing to end users.
Yeah, it's absurd.
But often they allow you to share as long as you don't resell. And it depends on what agreement you sign.
Well, if someone has a question about that, can they go to you folks and someone there answer those questions? Or is there anyone they could talk to? Or do you have to hire a lawyer to figure these things out?
It's something I think that is going to be more and more relevant as the project progresses. And we're actually working on looking for lawyers to do some pro bono work to analyze some of these things and to actually create some user agreements for us.
Okay, lawyers out there, you've gotten your marching orders here from Zach and Sasha.
Right, absolutely.
But in the meantime, in the farther future, when we talk about this becoming a municipal service or just a nonprofit service, community funded service, then the end bandwidth that we're sharing, is not just somebody's cable modem. What's going on there? So it's not just somebody's cable modem, but it's actually some commercial leased line that absolutely has the right to be shared. Mm-hmm. I mean, that would be something that we would negotiate, and that's where we would get the much larger amount of bandwidth when we talk about larger amounts of bandwidth to share.
And it's a similar situation that existed on phone systems back up, I think, through the 60s, in fact, in terms of being able to attach new technologies or new devices to the end of the phone line. Well, it's the same thing with your internet line. The difference is that a lot of these user agreements haven't been vetted by courts of law. So the companies obviously say one user, it's one line, you can't share it, or are trying to move in that direction. Legal precedent, I think, says another thing entirely. But because it's such a new technology, these issues really haven't been figured out yet.
Now, Sasha and Zach, you both have said this is an emergency summit of sorts. You didn't use that term, but I mean, you implied it had to get done right away because unless something is done quickly, community wireless will get sort of snuffed in the cradle, so to speak, and it could not really get off the ground. So there's a lot of important political work that needs to be done immediately and in the immediate future, not something we can't 5 years from now meet and talk about this. Now, I assume part of it is raising funds to get these off in different communities around the country. I know that in poor communities and in rural communities that aren't especially attractive to private companies, they're not very profitable. This is really an ideal way for them to get internet access, like the community in Southern California you referred to. But what are the more lucrative markets that commercial interests are going to share an interest in with community groups with setting up wireless networks? Mm-hmm. What are the fights? Or why do you have to meet right away? Where are the struggles going to be? What are the crucial ways as citizens we should be concerned about this, not just as users of these systems?
Well, there's several different areas where this is happening. I can touch on at least two really quickly. One is rapidly, there's been attempts to create barriers for people to enter this sort of technology. So they say, well, we're thinking about making it so that only certified people can deploy wireless networks.
Who's they in this case?
This would be proposals brought forward by major telecommunications companies. So what's interesting about community wireless networking is that the people that created these systems, pioneered these systems, wouldn't be the experts that they're then talking about having certified. What they're saying is that, they'd have just enough money, just enough hassle so that people that worked, say, full time, for example, for an SBC, they would be sent on the job to do this, whereas the nonprofits, inaccurately called amateur groups, wouldn't have certification. And therefore, it would be theoretically illegal to deploy the technologies that, for example, Zach and I have helped create. Another issue is just in terms of the spectrum. So the same way WILL has a certain frequency that people can tune into, wireless right now, the main frequency is all shared by a tremendous number of different uses.
Let me just put that another way for listeners' sake. There's a certain chunk of the electromagnetic spectrum that has been set aside for wireless use, wireless internet access, and everyone's sharing that amount of spectrum. And it's not an infinite amount by any means. And it's dedicated to that. So TV companies and shortwave broadcasters, no one can use it except for wireless internet access. But it's not a huge amount compared to what's done for normal over-the-air television or radio.
Well, not just that. There's a lot of other devices, non-computer devices on there. So radio phones that people get, if they get a 2.4 gigahertz is the frequency. But if they get a radio phone in that band, then that'll interfere with this.
So is garage there door openers. For all this stuff? Is there, or do we need more spectrum to pull this off?
I think we definitely need more. One of the things that's really allowed community wireless to flourish is the fact that this particular piece of spectrum that we're talking about is unlicensed spectrum. I mean, that's what's really key about it, is that this is one of the few pieces of radio space that you can design devices in where people don't need a license to operate.
And just to add to that, Zach, for the sake of listeners who might be familiar with this, WILL is the license. It's the only person or institution that's allowed to use AM 580, the 580 frequency. No one else is allowed on it. Since we're the only ones allowed on it, that's why people can hear the signal. And so in this unlicensed band, it's basically open, and people just find the open niches, and it accommodates all the needs.
Right.
But even
within licensed bands, right now we have for example, WILL has, you know, unique access to this band, and it could share this band with another producer or another media source that was broadcasting a much lower power level, let's say. So, for example, the same way an amplified speaker in a great hall can talk and everyone can hear them, and people can whisper to each other and be heard between themselves, but without interfering with the main speaker, we could do the same type of thing with our radio spectrum. And in this way, eliminate a lot of the congestion in unlicensed bands.
Yeah, we could do that. And I mean, this spectrum question is very interesting, because if I'm a commercial interest trying to do a commercial wireless network, and I'm envisioning, I'm saying, gosh, right now most Americans are paying $30, $40 a month to get broadband through cable or through the DSL. I don't know what the exact figure is, but
that's about right.
About right. And, you know, you've got how many, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 million people doing that. And I'm saying, I've got this other technology now that's coming along, wireless, and I can offer a better service than the cable or the phone line at a fraction of the cost. If I get everyone to sign up for $10 a month, say, and it's like my margin is enormous on that, and I'm going to take all those other customers away, I'm going to make a killing. Then if I'm a smart capitalist, and I'm personally probably not one, but if I were I one, I'd say, how do I get this spectrum so I'm the only one who's got the spectrum to do this system so no one else will get in? Is that a fight that's going on? Are these commercial just trying to get proprietary rights to spectrum and muscle out the ability to even exist so you won't even have any airwaves to use?
This is exactly what is already happening. And in fact, what you will see in 2006, 2007, are new technologies, wireless technologies, being brought out by cell phone companies who already have, you know, an infrastructure, a wireless infrastructure for cell phones, and who will then start delivering computer communications over these same networks. And that is a way of, you know, these massive corporations to leverage, you know, cell phones, computer technologies, all this into one package, but in much the same way that most package deals from phone companies are ridiculously expensive for what you get. You can imagine that end users will be paying far more for lack of any other alternative than it actually costs to produce or provide these services.
So let me get this right. So like if I'm the big cell companies, the big communication companies, their dream is to launch wireless internet in conjunction with their other activities and build up enough of a market and enough market power so they make it much more difficult for any alternatives to have a chance to form, even though economically there's really no justification for their market. They're trying to piggyback on their old market power to lock in market power where they really have no economic justification.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're trying to lock in, to throw up barriers to entry to the community groups, the startup groups, the entrepreneurs that are wanting to enter in at the very low cost. It's the same. We see the exact same thing happening in the radio and television worlds with right now, if you want to start a new licensed radio station, it's going to cost you $1 million, you know, I mean, because of all of the – to actually buy the channel and to get all the engineering done and get the licensing set up and all that stuff. So if we know that that's already happened to radio, we can only imagine it's going to happen without citizen involvement and activism. It's going to happen in this community wireless thing and stop it before it even starts. If we don't right now get in there into the FCC and make sure that they know that there's a community interest, a vital community interest to use the airwaves that we own to provide this unlicensed spectrum for these sorts of technological uses, these low-power technological uses.
We're talking to Zach Miller and Sasha Meinrath today on Media Matters. I'm your host, Bob McChesney. We're talking about the community wireless revolution that's taking place with community wireless networks, providing extraordinary and inexpensive access to the Internet at a ridiculously low cost. Mm-hmm. There will be a big national summit coming up 1 week from today or this coming weekend here in Champaign-Urbana at the University of Illinois, the 2004 National Summit for Community Wireless Networks, with 100, 200 people from around the country who are working on these issues, building these networks in a number of communities around the country as we speak, to talk about the fights that are necessary to preserve and extend community wireless so it doesn't get snuffed out and it can achieve the extraordinary promise it holds. Our guests today, as I said, Sasha Meinrath and Zach Miller. There are phone lines open. We've got about 5-6 minutes left. If people do have questions, the number here, 333-9455, our toll-free number, 1-800-222-9455. Just a reminder, I'll be back 1 week from today, and our guest will be Laura Flanders, the radio host on Air America and the author and columnist, and she'll be talking about her new book, The W Effect. So for those of you who've missed only hearing George W. Bush's name once on today's show so far, we'll hear it many more times a week from today, so you'll be satiated, I trust. We got a lot of other cities that are doing this, or communities besides Urbana and besides Southern California, and they're using different types of technologies, or is everyone moving toward the mesh community wireless technology?
People use different technologies to solve different kinds of problems. The problem that we're trying to solve is getting information. You know, we're here in the Midwest. We've got a lot of trees between the houses, and we've got a lot of houses that are real close together. So mesh makes a huge amount of sense here in the Midwest. There's other places where they've got the city's down in the valley, and there's a big mountain ridge all around it. And so they'll use sort of more of a hub-and-spokes model where they put some big antenna up on the mountain, and everybody down in the valley points their antennas up at that. So different people are working on different things, and that's one of the major strengths of a community wireless network, is that each community can solve its problems in its way. And then all these folks work together by coming to conferences like this and by working on the Internet together to make sure that their software is actually intercompatible. Our software will actually work. It's designed on a mesh basis, but it's easily modified to work as a hub-and-spokes basis or as any number of other models. And so we've got folks working together. Everybody's using open standards that are the core of the Internet protocol. Mm-hmm. And so this stuff works together with wired networks, with wireless networks, and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's just a matter of people working together. Sometimes stuff doesn't work together because they haven't communicated. But as long as everybody's using open standards, it can be adopted. It can be adapted.
Before we went on air, Zach, we were talking, you, Sasha, and I, about the community wireless networks. And you made a point, Zach, and I know, Sasha, you can talk about this too, that it's not just about having access to faster and less expensive access to the Internet and broadband communication, but rather community wireless networks can also change the content of what's on there. Mm-hmm. There's more to it than just cheaper, more accessible Internet access.
One thing that we are really excited to be doing here in the community is taking sort of two projects, the wireless project on the one hand and the community web hosting project on the other, and merging them. And what this will allow is massive improvements in the speed and access that people and users have to things like, you know, web hosting, email accounts, streaming audio servers, these sorts of resources that we're actually going to build into the system here locally.
So, I mean, ideally then a person who's part of the network will have access to produce stuff way beyond what they would normally have access
to. To produce stuff, and also, I mean, what Sasha's referring to is you can produce it, you can publish it on the network, and then folks who are on the network will have faster access to that than folks who are out on the Internet getting to that stuff via their wires. So if we identify existing publishers in town, like the Independent Media Center or any of the number of groups that host their websites on the Independent Media Center server, that server's on the community wireless network. So it's already the case that right now, if you're on the right part of the community wireless network, you can get very, very fast access to that website.
Let's say I'm out in Rantoul or someplace, and I'm like, God, this sounds awesome. I'd really like to get one of these networks in my community. Aside from the policy fights that you talked about and the summit we'll be dealing with to make sure there's spectrum and legal support to do community wireless networks, what sort of money are we looking at for someone to try to get one of these off the ground in a community of 10,000 people or in a neighborhood of a city?
To get initially off the ground, a business class DSL line, which allows you to redistribute, definitely in the service agreement, allows you to redistribute the bandwidth, costs about $100 to $200 a month. And then you can immediately begin sharing that out with a number of other folks. And the individual nodes right now, our cost is around $300 to $400 for one node. But that's a development cost, and we're working on getting that cost down.
Eventually, do you guys hope to have it at a point where, let's say, someone from some town, whatever, Charleston, says, hey, I want to have one of these. There'll mm-hmm. be a place they can go online and learn about it and help yep. get help setting these things up. How long in the future is that going to be?
Well, we already have some information up. We are actually working on a bunch more just sort of very accessible information, because there is so much technological issues around these sorts of issues. It'll be on the website, the CUwireless.net website. We're actually at the summit. We have an entire two-hour panel that is just introduction to community wireless networking. And the idea is that any of your listeners can come and interact directly with Zach and many other folks from around the country.
So there will be a session to get people warmed up in the issue if they don't
Absolutely.
Know anything about it.
But I also, before we run out of time, wanted to bring home this idea of what the costs are. Korea, okay. as a country, has embraced wireless communications. And I believe this was an article in Business Week, that mm-hmm. bastion of liberalism, where they were talking about...
And it's the most broadband or connected country in the world, is
right.
that correct?
Absolutely. Well, so in America, if you want... I'll throw out one number here, 1.5 megabits, which is a pretty fast line, T1 connection. You're talking about paying about $600 a month. In Korea, if you get an 8 megabit, which is more than five times more bandwidth, you pay about $9 a month. So five times more speed for 50 times less money.
And that's because it's wireless.
Exactly. And that... That's the sort of the astounding economies of scale you can
get. Has the government of Korea taken policies to encourage this? I mean, has it taken that sort of support at the government level to make that possible?
Exactly. Exactly. So end users pay less by far for more connectivity.
And what's it going to take to get that? What sort of – you guys have a sense of what policies we need right. to win to make the Korean situation possible here in the United States?
Well, the Urbana City government has taken the first step. They've recently allocated about $20,000 over 2 years to start building a community wireless network in Urbana. I encourage Champaign to do the same. But certainly it's going to take politicians. It's going to be taking community members, asking their politicians to support these sorts of networks.
And as I think you were saying off air, I mean, this is something that actually supports local businesses. It brings down
Absolutely.
Radically the cost of their communication.
The Urbana Business Alliance has already stated that they support this project. They made a resolution, and it passed overwhelmingly because they understand the benefits that this gives to businesses.
Well, I hear the band tuning up in the background, which means it's time for me to clear out of the studio. I want to thank our guests today, Zach Miller and Sasha Meinrath, who
thank
are the
you,
heads of the Champaign-Urbana, not the heads, but among the leaders of the Champaign-Urbana Community Wireless Network, and the organizers for the big conference coming up this coming weekend, Making the Connection, the 2004 National Summit for Community Wireless Networks. You can learn more about it at www.communitywirelesssummit.org. I plan to be there. I'm looking forward to attending it, and I urge you all, if you're listening, to tune in yourselves. My name is Bob McChesney. I'll be back in 167 hours with Laura Flanders. Until then, have a great week, and see you then. Bye-bye.
Enter the WILL sweepstakes today, and you could win a widescreen, high-definition TV from Champaign Audio, a shaker-style table and stools from Boxes and Boards, a Pfaff sewing machine from So Sassy, or artwork from Billy Morrow Jackson and City Mariah Jackson. And if your entry is postmarked by August 19th, you'll be eligible to win the Early Bird Prize, $500 worth of colorful plants and shrubs for your garden from Country Arbors. To request an entry form, call 217-333-0850.
This afternoon in Champaign-Urbana, becoming partly sunny with a high in the upper 70s and northeast winds around 10 miles per hour. Tonight, partly cloudy with a low in the lower 50s and east winds around 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a high in the lower 80s and south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. You're listening to WILL Urbana, public radio for Central Illinois. It's 2 p.m. Central Time. A Prairie Home Companion is next.